Welcome to Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK, Radio 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Manuel Criollo, and I'm your host for today's show here at Voices from the Frontlines. We have a very exciting show. We'll start off today's show with Thomas Kim, Executive Director of the Korean Policy Institute, who'll join us to discuss the current negotiations between the North Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and the U.S. Then we'll be joined by Walt Sinterfit, a National Board Chair of the Community HIV-AIDS Mobilization Project, CHAMP, who will join us to discuss their social justice approach to ending the AIDS epidemic. And finally, for our third segment, we'll be joined by Cindy Sheehan, who will join us to discuss her recent anti-war activism and her decision to run against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. That and more, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'd like to welcome Thomas Kim to the show. He's an associate professor of politics and international relations at Scripps College and the executive director of the Korean Policy Institute. Thomas joins us to discuss the recent negotiations between the U.S. and North Korea. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Hi.
So let's give the listeners a little bit. I know on September 3rd, 2007, both here in the U.S. and you heard some rumors in the U.S. and then particularly the Korean Central News Agency had stated that the U.S. had agreed to remove North Korea from the State Department's state sponsor of terrorism, which also includes things like Cuba, Iran, Sudan, and Syria. The following day, Christopher Hill, top negotiator for the United States, stated that the U.S. would not remove North Korea from the state sponsors of terrorism list. Can you talk a little bit about the history and the current state of negotiations between North Korea and the U.S.?
Sure. Well, as far as the removal from the terrorism list, this is something that has been a big sticking point for North Korea for quite some time, and frankly, it's pretty much impossible to imagine that you're going to end up with some kind of deal that sticks between North Korea and the U.S. that doesn't involve North Korea coming off of that list. And really, the issue is not at all whether or not North Korea is a sponsor of a state tariff, but really it has much more to do with the status of diplomatic relations between the U.S. and North Korea. So if it happens, which I think most people at this point hope and expect that it will, if the process moves forward, if it happens, then it really is not as if the State Department suddenly decided that North Korea wasn't going to be a sponsor of state chair, but rather it's an indication that the United States is serious about normalization with North Korea.
Well, you know, I think that that you're right. I mean, obviously, on one hand, that would be a big diplomatic victory for the DPRK if they're able to get off the list, which I'm assuming is almost impossible, especially under the new guise of, you know, not under the guise of, you know, George Bush's administration.
Sure.
But where do you think we're at? I mean, obviously, from one hand, if we looked at 4 years ago when the last elections, I felt, wow, I was really scared for DPRK. You know, most of the Democrats, instead of taking a war against Iraq, were saying, well, we should go attack North Korea, we should go attack Iran. And at least for at this moment, it seems like there's been a backing down from the U.S. and its very aggressive talks. What's been the role of both the DPRK in making this outreach to the U.S., but also at the same time, what's the role of all the other countries involved in this process of negotiations?
Sure. Well, let me first start by saying that since you mentioned Iraq and Iran, mm-hmm. it is important to recognize that what's going on in the Middle East actually has a direct implication on what's going on in North Korea. By that I mean that at a time, I think it was much more likely, as you were saying 4 years ago, there was real fear about what was going to happen with the U.S. possibly doing a preemptive attack on North Korea. And actually, I think part of what's happened is that Iraq has been so obviously a disaster that the impetus, the push to actually attack North Korea as well has really become secondary. And in fact, I think it's very interesting because as everyone agrees that Iraq has been such an albatross around the Bush administration, part of what that has meant is that the Bush administration is sort of looking for ways to achieve some kind of serious diplomatic victory before they leave. And in that, I think that they see the possibility of having something go down with North Korea. Now, a lot of that is because they know, as does everyone who's actually been paying attention to North Korea for the last 15 or 20 years, that for North Korea, the critical policy goal for North Korea has been for a long, long time, foreign policy goal, has been normalization with the United States. And so it's not as if the Bush administration hasn't known that really what the North Koreans want is peace. They've known that ever since they've gotten into office. And so it's in that sense, it is, I think, ultimately very important to realize that what's going on with regard to North Korea is actually deeply tied to what's going on with the Middle East, and it always has been. And that even includes the South Korean government sending troops to Iraq. The South Korean government was the third largest troop contingent to Iraq, and that had everything to do with the South Korean government seeking to essentially get the Bush administration to play a softer line on North Korea. Now, frankly, the Bush administration didn't pay any attention to the South Korean government, and it's really only been the disaster in Iraq, I think, that has been sort of the political push to try and settle things with North Korea. Now, that and also, of course, the nuclear device that went off. The interesting thing about the nuclear device is that when you think of it, you think of it as a militaristic move, as a very aggressive militaristic move. And, of course, on some level it is, but it's also, for the North Koreans, very much a diplomatic effort. It was an effort to basically say to the Bush administration, listen, we're going to keep moving forward, and if you're not serious about talking with us, then we're going to keep moving forward. And I think in that sense, frankly, although it seems quite odd and paradoxical that exploding a nuclear device could actually be a diplomatic move, it was actually quite successful for the North Koreans to have done that.
I mean, obviously, from my perspective, it's even crazy that the U.S. is attempting to regulate who or shouldn't, or who can and who shouldn't have nuclear armaments when they've been the only real purveyors of, you know, of using nuclear armament. We're talking to Thomas Kim, who is the executive director of the Korean Policy Institute and also a professor of politics, international relationships, Scripps College. Well, from your perspective, what do you think would be the main demands that North Korea wants to achieve? While obviously the goal to be removed out of the list of terrorism, the so-called list of terrorism, what are some other diplomatic goals that the DPRK has in relationship to these negotiations?
Sure. Well, I think the big thing, of course, is that they need economic development. They've known for a long time that they need economic development, and they've also known that, and this is in the context, of course, of their analysis 20-odd years ago, and this analysis of theirs has been going on for a long, long time. They knew 20 years ago that the geopolitical situation of the world was changing. They could see what was going on with the Soviet Union before it declined, before it collapsed. They knew that it was going to have a significant impact on their economy and their ability to keep up technologically with the South Koreans and with everyone else. And so they started to reach out, and especially after the Soviet Union collapsed, they really started to reach out to capitalist countries. Now, it didn't take them very long to figure out that no matter what they did with South Korea or Japan or anywhere else, that really, unless they normalized with the United States, that they really could not get on with the business of trying to reshape their economy and rebuild their economy after the collapse that it suffered. And so the primary diplomatic goal has been, of course, normalization. Now, with that is going to come, from their perspective, badly needed permanent supply of some sort of energy. The famine in North Korea, the difficulties that North Korea has had, a great, great deal of it is can be tied directly to the lack of a consistent energy source. And it's I think people forget with North Korea that basically we are talking about a very industrialized society. that was chugging along quite well and, in fact, had been surpassing South Korea during most of its existence until, of course, the late 80s and the advent of the fall of the Soviet Union, a number of natural disasters that came up and just the general collapse of the agricultural economy. But a lot of that is tied to energy. And so one of the big diplomatic gains, I think, that the North Koreans are looking for is they're just trying to figure out some sort of stable basis for energy, which is, of course, one of the fundamental reasons why they went forward with the nuclear programs that they did. They're looking at the South Koreans, and they say that the South Koreans have something like 16, I think, nuclear power plants. Just announced plans for 2 more nuclear power plants, and the North Koreans, of course, are thinking, well, we've got to get some of that because we don't have a firm supply of energy, and without that, they're not going to be able to achieve their goal of national sovereignty. So that's part of what we're looking at. Part of this also is they're looking to normalize relations with Japan for a number of reasons. One of which is that they're looking also for investment from Japan in the form of reparations for 35 years of colonization from 1910 to 1945. There's that as well. But even more than that, I think the biggest picture of the biggest thing that for the North Koreans is unification, of course, with South Korea. And the U.S. has been consistently an opponent to unification. At the very best, you could say that they've done nothing, which has essentially meant that they've been opposed to it because all their policies assume a divided Korea. And at worst, they've been an active opponent of unification. And so normalization with the U.S. is a really critical, huge step toward unification with the South. And that, I think, is the goal for both North and South Koreans and Koreans, frankly, everywhere.
You know, at the office down at the Strategy Center, you know, one of our main teachers, Leanne Hirsch Mann, has, you know, got into a hold of this whole report by the CIA, you know, like the 50-year sort of outlook of what we should look at. And in it, you know, in each of the scenarios that the CIA has sort of painted about the future, the unification of Korea seems to be right high on the... In other words, it's almost an inevitable motion that even the United States itself understands. We got about another 2 minutes. Why don't you give us at least some sense of how? What's the type of work that you're doing to try to support, you know, both the motion to bring some level of, you know, normalized relationships with DPRK, and I'm assuming this broader discussion about unification in the peninsula.
Sure. Well, one of the big things that the Korea Policy Institute is trying to do is basically we're just trying to get people in the U.S. up to speed about what's going on the Korean Peninsula. Mm-hmm. There have been tremendous changes in the last 7-8 years in Korea, and unimaginable, I think, to people even 10 years ago, and the kind of conversations that are going on in South Korea. In many ways, the working assumption in South Korea is that unification is already happening, that really, you know, and I have been saying this for quite some time, that I think in 10, 15 years, we're going to look back at this era that we're in right now, and we're going to say, yeah, unification is going on right now. It's just that a lot of people have in their minds a sort of an immediate unification, and what's going to happen is something much closer to a phased unification, which is what both North and South want. It's just going to go on building over time with cultural, even military, political, economic exchanges. The new summit that's coming up, in October, they're talking about doing some major expansions of economic trade between North and South Korea, which already has jumped this year in the first 7-8 months. And so part of what we're doing is we're just trying to explain to folks that there's some really tremendous changes going on. And frankly, we think it is true that unification is just, a divided Korea is just not a sustainable situation. There's just too much tension there on both sides, and there's too much unhappiness. There's still too many people divided. It's just not a feasible situation. And so I think the CIA is right. I think the progressives in South Korea are right. That people on the ground in South Korea think unification is happening, and so does the CIA. And we certainly do as well. And so part of it is just trying to get people to understand that. Because if you don't understand that that's what's going on, then it's hard to get into the mix of things.
Well, Thomas, how do people get a hold of the Korean Policy Institute?
They can reach the Korea Policy Institute through our website. Mm-hmm. It's kpolicy.org. That's kpolicy, kpolicy.org. And our contact information is on there.
Well, thank you very much, Thomas Kim, Executive Director of the Korean Policy Institute, and also Professor of Politics and International Relations at Scripps College. We'll be right back with our next guest, Walt Centerfit of the Community HIV AIDS Mobilization Project.